You're listening to Afternoon Jazz at 90.5 FM, WSNC Winston-Salem. Jazz in all its colors from the campus of Winston-Salem State University. I'm Jim Steele. Great being with you this afternoon. And we have so much fun around here, whether we're on the air or whether we're just greeting people who come by to visit. If you could be around here, you'd like to hang around for a while because we're just having a lot of fun, in addition to the jazz music that we're playing. And, of course, since it is the last Thursday of the month, it's time to spend some time with our sister friend, Sarah McCoy. And this is her show, her few minutes of fame. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you so much, Jim. It's so flattering.
Bookmarked with Sarah McCoy. That's the show that we like to say is capriciously the third or the final Thursday of the month, or whenever Sarah decides to come by.
She's always welcome.
And Sarah, this week you brought a really cool, big-selling author who everybody knows about. His new book is called Varnia, and he is Charles Frazier.
Is that the Southern way of saying Varina?
Yeah.
Okay.
Charles Narnia,
guys. You know, it's awesome. You open it, you go through the wardrobe. It's a whole new thing.
Charles Frazier, he's the author of Cold Mountain. Everybody knows Cold Mountain because it was that great story, that huge book award winner, but also became a motion picture. Mm-hmm. And, of course, for so many people, that's when it becomes real, when it becomes a motion picture. So, Charles, welcome to WSNC.
Oh, good to be here.
Well, I'm going to turn the conversation over to you and Sarah so you can get everything right.
But
you're not only here for your afternoon, but also you've got a fun event that's coming up at Bookmarks.
Right.
Tonight.
6:30.
So y'all talk about that, and I'm going to be quiet for a little while.
No.
Varnia.
Varina, yes. So we're talking about Varina, and we have our it's a doubleheader day today where I'm on with you all talking with Charles about his book, and that's going to be sort of the appetizer to the main event dinner show tonight, which is at Bookmarked, and that's 6:30. It is called Books and Brews. So Foothills Brewing Company, right next door to the bookstore, is going to be providing a whole bunch of beers for tasting, and that begins at 6. So if you want to come earlier than when we'll be talking at 6:30, please do come. My husband will be there promptly at 6 o'clock. Doc B has decided he will be sitting there ready to taste beers and to talk all about Civil War book.
I'm going to be there at 6.
Yes, exactly. So that is going on tonight. Don't miss out. Right now, we're talking on my favorite show with my favorite Jazzy Jim brother to get the ball rolling and get you all who are out there and possibly doing a little, 5 o'clock drive home commute, some info about why you should come back out tonight on a Thursday and come see us talk. So it's us again in conversation. So, Charles, welcome to Winston-Salem.
Thank you.
Have you ever been here before?
Welcome to Winston-Salem.
I know. I told him how brand new I am, even though I already feel like it's my home. Mm. But I've only been here since, September, really. Yeah. And that's by Winston-Salem. Is that how you say that? Yes, Winston-Salem standards. It's not very long. I'm fresh. I'm a fresh resident. But I'm proud. Proud to be here. So, Have you been here before, or is this your first time?
No, I mean I'm from North Carolina.
Well, that's one of my things I want to talk about.
Winston-Salem a million times.
Yes. Oh wow. Have you seen it change in?
And well, it's been a little while since I've been downtown, and I hear the downtown's very different than it was just a few years ago.
Have you been to the bookstore? Yeah.
Have not. That's one of the new ones I'm going to on this tour that I'm happy to see. I mean, it's a great thing to see the new independent bookstores opening and hopefully thriving.
It's gorgeous. It's one of the most, I mean, we both were just talking about how we do book tour for every book and we go to all these different places, and it really is one of the most welcoming and modern bookstores I've been in a long time. They've done an amazing job, the ladies there. So Beth runs the bookstore. A little shout out to them. Ginger Hendricks, Jamie Southern. Those are really the three that have just taken Bookmarks from this festival that was grand and wonderful and said, you know what, let's blow this up. Let's make this not just a festival ground, but let's make it a bookstore and a community place that people come to have beers and do yoga. I mean, they do everything at this place. It's really quite amazing. So since we're on the topic of being a North Carolina boy, tell us, because other people out there might not know your background. I do, because I'm a super fan, and so I know everything. But tell everyone out there, where were you born? Where were you raised? How are you North Carolina?
Yeah, I was born in Biltmore Village, right out, you know, right there by, as part of Asheville.
Yeah.
And I was in a little hospital that has been turned into a boutique hotel, as everything else has in Asheville these days, either a hotel or a brewery.
You'll have to tell me
and,
the name of it.
So it's called Posh.
And I'm going to have to go, because I haven't been to Asheville ever in my life.
Really?
No. So that's on my list of places I must go. And now I've decided I must go. Mm. I will stay at Posh, and I will say I am staying in the birthplace of the renowned Charles Frazier.
You got to come to Asheville. It's 25 years ago, downtown Asheville was like a ghost town. There was Malaprop's bookstore, one or two restaurants, and it was boarded up. And now you go on a pretty weekend, it'll be packed with tourists and people wandering around going to restaurants. A lot of my old-time Asheville friends complain about the tourists, but to me, I much prefer a busy downtown to a ghost town.
Wow. I can't even imagine it that way now because it's so... before I'd even moved here, when I lived in Texas, I heard about Asheville.
Asheville. Even a few years ago, when I was away from the South, people asked where I was from. I'd have to explain where Asheville is, what kind of town it was, all that. Now I just say Asheville.
Yeah.
I don't even have to say North Carolina anymore.
Yeah, I know everyone knows it.
Yeah.
But you were born there?
Yeah.
You didn't grow up there,
I grew up farther west in North Carolina, all the way out in the very tip end of the state.
Okay, was it called Andrews?
A little town called Andrews.
See, yeah. I did my homework. Is it still a small town, or is that kind of blossomed?
I was talking to a politician one time in Raleigh quite a few years ago, and he asked where I was from, and I said, it's about 2.5 hours west of Asheville. He said, I didn't know there was any North Carolina that far west of Asheville.
I know. Is it in the mountains?
I mean, it's a
mountain town.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Well, now it's all coming together, though, because I think about Cold Mountain.
Yeah.
I mean, that you knew that mountain region. You knew those people.
Well, my grandparents' farm was right kind of at the foot of Cold Mountain.
Wow.
In Haywood County. Yeah,
it's real. I know. There's nothing better for a reader when they're like, really? The fiction is real? It's real.
An aunt of mine who had lived, she could see Cold Mountain out her kitchen window for most of her life. She said, you just made all that Cold Mountain stuff up, right? And I said, no. Look out your window. That's it right out there.
Wow. Oh, that's Cold Mountain, again, was Civil War based. And then between Cold Mountain and this new book, Barina, you had two other books. And that was, I'm trying to make sure I get all the pronouns right, 13 Moons and Night Woods.
Yeah.
What brought you back to Civil War?
Well, I didn't think I wanted to write about it again, but the past few years, you can't hardly watch the news every day without realizing that war just keeps on rearing its ugly head. I mean, today, pick up the paper, you see that the Tennessee legislature is intent on punishing Memphis for taking down the statues of Nathan Bedford Forrest and Jefferson Davis. Nathan Bedford Forrest, the Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan, right after the war, and they're going to withdraw some grant money from Memphis because they took those statues down.
Wow! And I think of everything that happened. My husband went to UVA, so it was very close to both of our hearts, and everything that went down there.
Yeah,
and that brought me back to this book, and I thought, wow, you know, this novel is about how you're, I'm not going to give too much away because we're going to talk about this tonight in depth, but how history remembers you, how who sort of makes the template for what is our history.
Yeah, and sort of the consequences of being on the wrong side mm-hmm. of history.
Exactly. And I think we're at a juncture now where we're kind of having to think about that ourselves as a contemporary society.
Yes, certainly should be.
Yeah, and that's very, it's rife with controversy, right? Who yep. is the right side? It's the same thing. Yeah. I think, at least in this book, there seems to be a reckoning. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to give too much away, but there seems to be a reckoning. And I wonder, while I was reading this, will we see that? And if we do, will it be in our lifetimes, or will it be kind of like this, where it's not, it's sort of reflected on?
I've sort of come to feel that it's sort of like the truth and reconciliation process, that it's hard to have reconciliation without acknowledging the truth.
Yeah, that's brilliant. If I could, I would take that, which you just said, that little soundbite, and I would embroider it on a nice Civil War pillow and set it in my house for everyone to read, because I totally agree. So, again, tonight we're going to be talking about themes and the narrative and everything that went into Verena. But right now I wanted to get into some other fun topics that, yeah, for me as a writer are interesting. Tell us a little bit about your writing life. Are you a day writer, a night writer? Do you go for long spells, short, and then research? How does it?
Well, I don't feel at all creative until about 3 in the afternoon.
Wow.
So there's not a lot of point of me sitting down at a desk until about then. So in the mornings, especially if I'm in Asheville, I run some errands and then get out on my mountain bike or go for a hike or something. Usually up there, I'm on my bike at least 5 days a week if the weather's good.
There's a lot of riders who bike. Chris Bojalian, yeah, bikes.
Does he?
All the time up in Vermont. Like, yeah, it's his escape and out and getting out in nature. And I love to walk jog. Call it a walk jog because, okay, we'll just go. We'll just move on. But I like to walk jog because I really enjoy clearing my head in nature and the quietness. I feel like even at our desks, would you agree? There's noise now with technology.
Yeah.
So close.
Yeah. And I'm not really made to sit at a desk for long periods of time. So that part of the writing is one of the hardest for me. Mm. It's just the immobility of it. So I need to work that out before I sit down.
And then once you do, how long do you sit to write?
Oh, sometimes. Usually, if I'm really in the middle of a book, it'll be 6 or 8 hours.
Wow.
Which becomes really inconvenient with, dinner time and that
kind
of thing.
Yeah, I was just thinking, that's like 10, 11 at night you finish.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And I can't say that that's, because I really do believe every person has their own flow, their own sort of creative rhythm, so you have to pay attention to that. And for me, I'm very similar in that in the early mornings, it's not that I can't even write, I can't even have a conversation with my husband. Like, it is like, I just am not even focused on anything until I do something active in the morning, yeah, I have my coffee, get a little caffeine going, and then I can usually, okay, now let's start putting sentences in my own head together before I could ever put anything down on, yeah, the page. Yeah. And then I work until about 8 or 9 o'clock at night, which is when my husband gets home. And he, yeah, kind of, we talked outside earlier, we were talking, chatting, and I about being introverts and extroverts and that whole sort of system of learning to be an extrovert. And I said, my husband is an extrovert. And so he comes home and he wants, after a day, he wants to talk. That's, yeah, how he relaxes. He wants to talk. Let's talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. And for me, that is, that's an energy. That's a taking of energy. And it's more like a sun. Do you know what I mean? Like, where a sun can, like, give you energy, but at the same time, it's sucking energy. And, yeah, you're exhausted, yeah, after you've been out in the sun all day, yeah, even though it was refreshing. I love you, honey. This is all. He knows I love him. Yeah. But,
well, that whole business of, your job, is to sit in a room by yourself for long periods of time for many, many days and months in a row. And then you get the book finished, and then it's fling you out into the world to talk to people and travel around and, you know, that kind of thing. And
right.
And it's frequently, the transition can be difficult.
Yeah, and I think it's because even though, you know, extrovert, introvert, doesn't matter what kind of person or what side of the spectrum you fall on, everybody wants to make other people happy. You know, that's why we write, really, yeah. is because not necessarily to make people happy, but we want to contribute something to other people. And so even when we're in an extrovert mode, we're exhausted because we want other people to be contributed to. So we're giving of ourselves, yeah. of our energy and our time and our everything that we've got to give, and then we're all empty by the end, and we go home. And I don't know about you.
And it's kind of pointless to go out on book tour and be this sullen, you know, thing.
Yeah,
I'm not talking to anybody. I'm going to be a tortured artist.
Oh, gosh. But I think, you know, you come back, I'm sure, after these events, and you shut down, and you get quiet again, and that's the only way to be able to hear the next set of voices, right? The next characters.
I'm gonna go to Asheville when I'm done with this book tour, and buy a new mountain bike and ride for about a month. And
then,
before I get back to work.
You'll have to tell me all the good trails then too, because my husband, huge. He's one of those guys. He has bought. We have mountain bikes and gear and tackle. I don't even know what it is, but it's all over our garage. He's like, it's to put it on the back of the car. I don't know if you have one of these tackle things.
Gotta have all your.
Yeah, he has all these toys for mountain biking. And then we get here and he's like, now I can't find any trails. I need to find trails. So you'll have to tell me the trails for Asheville, and then I can go out that way.
Miles and miles and miles of them up there.
That's the beauty of this state, too. I'm learning and discovering, as you know, you've been here since birth. I just got here, is that the landscape, it's unlike Virginia. I was going to bring this up. This book is, part of it is based in Richmond. They start in Richmond. And I lived in Richmond for 2 years. And I thought you did a really excellent job capturing that place in that time. Because even now, and when I lived there, the war is almost as raw and wounded with people as it was back then. I mean, when I was shocked when I first got there and I met someone and I said, the Civil War, all the Civil War sites are wonderful. And they said, you mean the war of northern aggression? And I thought they were joking. You know, me, I was so light. I was like, you funny. And they were dead serious. And I realized I had offended them by saying that was funny. But in this book, did you have time in Richmond or no?
I was around doing research and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And I've been, you know, been to Richmond over the years.
How do you research? That's one of my questions. I was curious.
I do the early on in a book, I do all the primary material stuff, letters and
libraries and that sort of thing.
Well, yeah. Now a lot of that kind of thing is digitized.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the research for this I did through the that Southern Collection at Wilson Library at Chapel Hill. They've got a lot of that stuff digitized. So it kind of feels like cheating to sit at home.
Does it?
You know, in a pair of shorts and a t-shirt and do that. But and then after I get that stuff down, then I like to go to places where the people were. And, just walk around, be there.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it doesn't in any specific way be in the book. I couldn't point to a place, but you just absorb some things from it, from being there.
In some ways, doesn't it feel kind of like is it the Stanislavski? Is that how you say it? At the actor's studio?
Where you
take on that sort of role of the character that you're portraying. And I like to walk in the footsteps. I need to be in the place. I need to smell it, feel it, hear it.
Yeah.
What are the sounds around me? What is the, is there a chill in the air even though it's like sunny and hot? Is it eerie?
And I kind of look at it almost like a movie location scouting. where, you know, I can look at a place and think, oh, a scene could happen here, and this person could come in here and interact here and leave this way. And it helps me not have to imagine every single physical detail to start with a real location.
For any creative writers out there, this is like creative writing 101 here. It's exactly how I feel. You need to live it in some capacity, at least for me, so that way I can...
Did you spend a bunch of time up around Harper's Ferry?
Yes,
in that area?
So much time.
Well, when I read your book, I had never been up there. And then shortly after, I was up there for a few days, and I was all around.
Did
thinking,
you?
Oh, I can see the landscape.
Oh my gosh, that means it. By
so
the way, you all,
clearly.
This man graciously blurbs the Mapmaker's Children, and that's why I consider him a good friend. And I am just thrilled that he's here today, and I'm thrilled that tonight we're going to get together at Bookmarked, 6:30, 6 if you want beer. No matter what, the beer will be flowing all night, don't worry. And then we're going to sit down again, Charles and I, and we're going to talk about Verena Davis and her life and how this beautiful character who is almost forgotten, Charles has pulled out of history and brought back to full color for us. And I love this book. This is a wonderful book. It's already a New York Times bestseller. It has already made the list, so you have to come out tonight. Everyone who's listening, come on out. Make plans. It's going to be a great night. Charles will be there. You get to hear us talk. He'll sign your book. It'll be worth a gazillion dollars after that, so you definitely want to come. And we will see you then. Sound good?
You're listening to Afternoon Jazz at 90.5 FM, WSNC Winston-Salem. Jazz in all its colors from the campus of Winston-Salem State University. I'm Jim Steele. Coming up at the top of the hour, National Public Radio News. Then we'll go into the final hour of Afternoon Jazz.
WSNC.